an honor to be here. Winter. Winter is here. Though we've had some sun these past 2 days, I've done my gardening, which is a joy for me. The edge of winter is still very, very strong for me this year, in many ways, in our weather, in our climate, and shifts in our culture. As I was looking for an opening reading, the one that came to mind is Robert Frost's Meditation, which I'll share with you. Whose woods these are, I think I know. His house is in the village, though. He will not see me stopping here to watch his woods fill up with snow. My little horse might think it queer to stop without a farmhouse near. Between the woods and frozen lake, this darkest evening of the year. He gives his harness bells a shake to ask if there is some mistake. The only other sound's a sweep of gentle wind and downy flake. Yes, these woods are lovely, dark and deep. But I have promises to keep. Miles to go before I sleep. And miles to go before I sleep. Thank you, Ellen. Winter. Yes, it is winter. And I know for me it's a hard winter. We've had snow and rain. Yes, we've had this wind, the cold and numbing wind blowing around us. Not just here in Portland, go across the nation. Not just the climate. There's a cold, numbing wind blowing throughout the globe, which troubles me deeply. I have a hard time coping with it all at times. Sure, there are moments I'm upbeat, energetic, and enthusiastic. People see that. It doesn't mean I don't have moments of questioning and doubt, even despair. John Steinbeck wrote a book in the 1960s called The Winter of Our Discontent. As I look around the world, I read the news, watch the headlines, I feel like writing another book called The Winter of Our Despair. It's been hard for me. As I was looking for the offerings in the Church of the Larger Fellowship, which are many, there's a beautiful sermon written addressing this very point by Reverend Kingman, whom I was sorely tempted to use. It's beautiful. It speaks to my heart very closely. She too knows despair. How we cope with it? I have my ways. I can entertain myself. I can distract myself. One of my favorite distractions, I'll tell you, is chocolate. Now, I mean that two ways. I mean it figuratively, but also literally. Dark chocolate is just fine with me. But the question I'm asking, what am I feeding? Am I feeding my soul, or am I just feeding my taste buds? In the Buddhist traditions, they talk about that emptiness inside and feeding it. In Buddhism, they call it the hungry ghost. Reverend Kingman talks about that God-sized hole within. I don't quite know what it is for me. I know that I have a hunger there. And I have an emptiness. So, I was tempted to read Kingman's sermon, but I found it was maybe too close for me. So I found another one written earlier by Reverend Nell Newton, a wonderful minister in Austin, Texas. And perhaps this is what I need to feed my soul as she speaks of joy and happiness. Her presentation is called A Bright Golden Thread. When a weaver starts a new piece, she must first tie the warp strings on her loom to form an underlying loop base for a fabric. And if you'll excuse me, the font's not quite large enough. The warp strings are the long strings that are fixed in place, while the woof or weft strings are the ones she sends back and forth with a shuttle to create the body, texture, and design of the fabric. As she weaves, she might cut the woof threads, add in new ones, or change colors or textures. But she won't cut the warp strings. The warp strings remain constant. Musician Carole King gives us an analogy which I love. My life is like a tapestry of rich and royal hue. I like to look back and see the patterns that have emerged across my life. There are patches where the woof threads are thin and frayed, perhaps by sadness, poverty, loneliness, and disconnection. But those are the very places where the warp threads show through more clearly. For me, one of these warp threads is a thread of joy. Now, before we go further, let's review the difference between happiness and joy. Happiness is a feeling, external and temporary. It comes from something outside the self, a purchase, an encounter, maybe a piece of chocolate. It's what I call the sparky pony emotion. It's fun, it feels good, and it's over pretty quickly. Joy, on the other hand, is internal and it lasts. It can coincide with other feelings like grief. Joy can be present in the middle of a storm, whereas happiness may not survive the smallest tempest. And while happiness can increase over a person's lifespan, it is also strongly determined by genetics and personality. Joy, though, is more of a constant, and people can strengthen it by learning to recognize its nuances. So to recap, happiness, external, temporary, joy, more internal, more constant, the woof of life. I came across a book, this is Rev Newton, called Happiness. Happiness is a Big Problem, written by Dennis Prager. It had a subtitle, It's called A Human Nature Repair Manual. Well, let's see. Prager makes the argument that happiness is a moral imperative. He claims as members of society, we should strive to be happy, not solely for personal improvement, but also as an altruistic endeavor to improve the larger society. According to Prager, we have an obligation to at least act as happy as possible because it does affect others. And it does. He likens it to a form of hygiene, and he contends that everyone is capable of it. Yes, I have problems. We all have problems, which we should share with our close friends. But we shouldn't inflict a bad mood upon everyone. He insists that happy people make the world better and unhappy people make the world worse. Well, I heard an interview with him and I found his message stirring, but also it raised questions in the back of my mind. Sometimes I was not agreeing so easily. Although my first blush was, yes. I hushed the questioning voice down for a few years, but finally came back and looked at it. Prager, Dennis Prager, is a commentator, a conservative commentator. And when poking through some of his arguments, I found some real problems with other things he says. Let's just stop and look at happiness for a moment. Happiness is a moral obligation. Why was I so ready to swallow that one? What made it so compelling to me? Prager is Jewish, but this message is strongly consistent with modern Christians who would link an individual's health with their cheerful countenance. And it's awfully consistent with messages of the New Age movement, that if we can control our words, we can control our perception of reality. Because we're so powerful, we should choose to be happy. We should choose to be happy. If we're not happy, it's our own fault because we're not trying hard enough. Well, at this point, it's getting thin. To say expressing anything but happiness is somehow to being disloyal or inobservant to the grandeur of one's God. So this whole happiness thing becomes a theological statement as well as a moral imperative. But think about it. Where does it leave people who are genetically or neurologically predisposed to depression or unhappiness? Or those who are dealing with extreme life challenges? What are we to do with ourselves if we simply are unable to plaster an artificial smile over our sadness or despair? Are we failing when we fall into a funk? Are we being selfish if we get stressed? Are we disconnected from the God of our understanding if we are overwhelmed? Does it mean we are denying the presence of grace? What are we to make of this? What are we to make of this? Well, thinking, joy. What if joy might be an antidote to this heavy-handed insistence on happiness? Joy, the internal, the long-lasting. This is a challenge for me. As I was wrestling with these ideas, I sat down with a man whom I'd known for many years, who is living with depression and bipolar. It's not easy for him. He is funny and lovely, although a bit Eeyore-ish. That's nice, because I, Nell, often feel like Piglet. We're a great team. I enjoy being with him, even when he's not being, enjoying being anywhere. So I asked him about happiness and joy, the whole thing. What are his thoughts? As I suspected, due to the neurochemistry in his brain, he's not happy most of the time. And he has difficulty recognizing joy when it shows up. I think he appreciates the way joy can accommodate other emotions, like grief. He's seen grieving families have joyful memories even amidst their tears. Have I? Have you? When challenged, though, when he's in a depressed state, he's just not going to recognize joy, even if it perches on his bedpost and sings to him awake every morning. He is too occupied carrying around the heavy gray stone of depression. I talk with him some. Our theologies are very similar. Panentheism, which I will confess, I had to look up. Much as I enjoy theology, that's a word I've missed, and I'll tell you. Panentheism, it's from ancient Greek, is the belief that the divine pervades and interpenetrates every part of the universe, and also extends beyond time and space. This is, you know, the divine is in all of us on steroids. So, as I talk with him, our theologies are similar, variations on panentheism, which sees everything as part of the divine, and variations on process theology, which recognizes we are all co-creators in this. When you go around saying that, it can all sound kind of sparkly and kind of mystical until you get down to the fact that if everything is part of God, that includes everything. The bad smells, the shin splints, and even that great gray stone he's carrying around. So even though he's not particularly uplifting, my friend's depression brings him painfully closer to understanding his God, his spirituality. And he has discovered that if it comes down to being right or being kind, he's choosing to be kind. Happiness, he can't do happiness. He admits that. But he can do kindness, and he chooses this. And choosing is what allows him to feel he is participating and not just surviving. Because kindness creates a kind of connection. It brings him as close to recognizing joy as he can manage. His moral imperative is to be kind. Maybe why it feels good to be a piglet around his Eeyore. He is kind. And it gives him connections. And I reflect, what are my connections? What are our connections? In the warp strings of life, joy doesn't flash as brightly. But the many strands of kindness are created, creating a steady pattern of beauty and satisfaction. Sometimes, even I get a bit Eeyore-ish. I'm generally a person of cheerful disposition, but recently, due to pressures of family and school, I was growing a bit testy, a bit snappish, even peevish. It happens. For some of us. Family members begin saying things like, what's up with you? Or, I think I'll leave you alone for a while. Probably good advice for me sometimes. It took a person outside our family to listen to my snarlings and snapping and point out the obvious. Nell, I said, you seem to have lost sight of the excitement of all the cool things you're doing. Where is that joy? Where is our joy? Joy, joy, joy. Ah! Yes, I agreed, I told them, I had lost sight of any joy that might be attending the work of ministry. Not a good sign. And parenting teenagers and working on a good marriage. There's a lot on my plate. Ministry, teenagers, and marriage, joy as well? No, I was too distracted by the sticky bits of deadlines and a stupid cold and the general fears to see the joy underneath everything as it happens. I grumped away from that conversation with the grim determinance to go out and go find some joy somewhere. I'll show them. Well, I gotta confess, I wasn't particularly in the mood for joy. But I put it on my to-do list. I do lists. There's nothing that can prevent me from paying attention to the joy that is this constant. For it is a bright golden thread that is woven throughout my days on this planet. A bright golden thread is her talk. An hour later, I was buying groceries. Now that was on my to-do list too, and it was higher than joy. So, check that off. I got everything on my list and had enough money to pay. Then I remembered to bring reusable bags. Everything's going great. And then, as I always do, my bit of frolicking. As I left the store with my cart, I looked both ways, stuck my tongue out just so, jumped on my cart, gave it a push, running down the parking lot, riding out like a kid in a little go-kart. 8 feet away from a parked car, I jumped off, took control of the cart, carried on my normal comportment. It's a little ritual I have. At my cart, I loaded up the groceries and then spotted a brilliant crimson ladybug on the door. No black spots, just solid bright red. "Well, what are you doing here? There's nothing but asphalt and cars all around." I scooped it up and set it down on the dashboard in front of me and drove home. During the drive, it marched back and forth. I was looking at it, it was looking at me. A glowing red dot of independence. At home, I coaxed it back into my hand and stepped out of the car. When I opened the door and opened my hand, the tiny red beetle up flew and lit immediately at my nearby rose bush and is having lunch. Aphids galore. And just like that, I saw in the middle of my life storm, which was very stormy, in the midst of my anxiety and peevishness, and I was anxious and peevish, the beauty of a beetle and the roses. The deep satisfaction of bringing home food for my family, the silliness of riding on a grocery cart. Some of these joys were external, but they shone light upon the deep everyday gleam of these bright places in the tapestry of my life. And then I gave thanks again that I could recognize joy, at least this time so easily, pivoting in an afternoon. Maybe not every day, not every afternoon. Maybe not all the way to a sparky pony of happiness, but definitely at least to joy. Reverend Nell Newton, when I got to her essay, I thought, I need to hear that. I love Reverend Kingman's essay, which speaks very closely where I am. Nell Newton does not, but I need to hear what Nell has to say there. It is winter, and again, it's a hard winter. And how to find my joys in this time is my challenge. I look at connections. I think of my family. In our family, we have this line. It's called, "Food is meant to be shared." If any of you know me for any while, you've heard me say it before, but now you've all heard it. And food is the primal gift across all cultures. We have our monthly potluck here. Do I enjoy eating? Yes. Do I find joy in bringing food to share? Even more so. It is the board upon which we spread. And I think of the joys of my life. Again, if I'm feeling peevish and snappy, they're hard to find. I do like my chocolate. Very much. But in these hard times, it's important to find more than chocolate, but it's to find resilience and strength. There are personal challenges, societal challenges, global challenges. And to be resilient, we have to be flexible and adaptive. If we are rigid and stiff, we will break. This is Reverend Kingman speaking now. We have to find that source of strength and carry forth. This winter will not last forever, but it's going to last for a while. I find in reflection, one joy I have, I enjoy my friendships, but a joy I have is a strength I get from this community. This has become part of our life. It's been this way for nigh on 20 years. Many friendships have been here. Some have come, some have gone. That's a joy for me. And back home, I still eat chocolate. But it's different when I hear a voice next to me that says, Papa. I look over, there's my daughter. She says, Papa, would you like to share some chocolate with me? Like the ladybug, that could be straight a little bit longer. Thank you.